Hey everyone, this is a content warning. Our show contains frank discussion of addiction, mental illness, and trauma.
That means we'll likely delve into issues such as self-harm, physical and sexual abuse, and even suicidal ideation.
This is your one and only trigger warning. And remember,
we are not doctors. So if you need help, please seek it out.
You load 16 tons and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Yeah. Corey.
Yeah.
Corey.
What?
Corey,
what's
up? Hey, look at this. Look at our. We're so cute.
I think we are too.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
We're aging well.
I think so. Well, you know what? You're aging well for a white woman because you're non-problematic, okay?
Everybody knows it. That's the face cream I use. It's called non-problematic, and it comes in a giant. It's basically, you know, it's ground up. Children.
That's pretty problematic, Corey.
What do you mean?
But I think congratulations, Corey, for looking good for a white woman in their 40s. Are you in your 40s? You just hit your 40s. What happened?
I am 43 years old.
Yeah, man.
I don't freak out about, you know, saying my age or anything like that. I feel like I'm supposed to. Everyone wants me to. Not me, everyone wants.
It's because you look good, though. You don't freak out.
Okay? No, because I just kind of like, you know, look a little younger, and I just.
Because white women age like bananas in the backseat of a hot car. All right, and you're doing great. No. Listen, Corey, I met a white woman just recently.
What fruit am I then? How do I? What kind of fruit am I? No, you know what it is? I'm stuck in my trauma. I'm like Andy Milonakis. Is that? I'm stuck in my trauma age, so I'm always going to look like a scared 14-year-old.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, it works well on you.
That's like one of my most traumatic. 14 or 18 were my, like, I would say 14 is when I started writing fucking poetry. So that has to be something happened. I don't remember what it was, but something must have fucking happened because at 14 I started writing poetry.
Yeah, I'm going to say somewhere early in high school is where I lost my will to live.
Mm.
Somewhere in there. Here's the thing. I didn't realize. What was, you know, of course you don't because you're a teenager, but like, I didn't realize like the things that were happening to me were traumatic, you know? So, you know, my mom would do all sorts of like, I say creative punishments, you know, mm-hmm. I had to sleep in the bathtub on several occasions. Because, you know, my mom would say stuff like, you know, I only have to provide you a house. It does not have to be comfortable, which is not true. But stuff like that. So go sleep in the bathtub. You don't deserve the bed.
Oh, once you're 18, you're no longer my fucking problem. You're out of this house. I've got that.
Yeah, I got that too. You better be in college or you better have a job or else you're getting out or whatever. So I did both. Both a bad job and a bad school decision just so I could stay, you know, safe.
It wasn't, I don't think it was, they were bad decisions. I feel like you did the best with the decisions that were given to you.
Yeah,
you were handed a bunch of bad possible decisions and you just chose the best one for you. That's what happened. Like, I get
And then I turned into a homeless kid with a house, you know, so I spent a lot of, my teen years just not at my house, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Like, of course I can go home, but who the fuck wants to be there? Right?
I'm going to be at my friends. I'm going to stay the night at my friends every fucking night. I had families that basically were like, oh, you're our kid, you know?
And
like, okay, cool. And, you know.
Yeah. A bunch of places
though,
I would stay aside from my house. Yeah, for sure. I had a couple of different mamas besides
and
my
mom. And I feel like even if you had a good childhood, I feel like every good or bad childhood, you need that not neighbor support, but like your friend's parents become your. Well, they should. They should become your parents.
It takes a village.
I feel like it's. It fucking does, man. And if you're one of those people that like takes in kids that are like your kids' as friends, fucking bless you, man. Like, yeah. I mean, that
my,
is.
My friend's mama used to call us strays.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's like, I keep all the strays here. So
we had strays that lived at our house too. You know what I mean? Like, because we had like a giant, like, we had a 5-bedroom home. So it was like an old Victorian. So, like, people like could just come and like it, teenagers, they were our friends. It wasn't like just people. People came from near and far and they were like, is this the house? Built in 1894.
This is the house that they speak of.
It was our house. They said our house was haunted. It was in the 1800s. It was built, and growing up, everyone said it was haunted. My mom
anything
says
in the
it's
1800s
haunted.
Is haunted, dude.
Everybody
there
says
was
it,
there had to be a slave or a black person there or something that haunts it.
Oh, they said it was like dead babies. Like there was supposedly like this woman who kept like losing babies over and over again. Just she had 7 lost babies. Then the other one was, that there was a kid that drowned in our creek and they said his name was Damien. And then I realized that you're talking about that fucking Omen. Like, shut up. Like, I'm not going to fall for that.
Yeah. Well, have you heard about Lake Lanier?
Lake Lanier?
Yeah. It's in Georgia.
Okay.
Have you heard about Lake Lanier?
No. What's going on with
Lake
Lanier?
Okay. So Lake Lanier is like a famously haunted lake, they believe, right? They believe the lake's haunted. They think it's possessed. Lots of people have died in this lake. Usher's like stepson or something, or half son or something, died in this lake.
What?
People have gone missing. Like bodies have just shown up. Like the lake is fucked up. Like if there's one place they tell you not to go in Georgia, it's Lake Lanier. But they don't,
wait,
but
Georgia,
here's the
are there like gators and stuff? Like is it swamp?
No.
What?
No, it's just a regular lake.
What
but I'm gonna tell you
so dangerous.
I'm gonna tell you what's why. Because they murdered a town full of black people and there's a submerged town underneath Lake Lanier.
Oh my God, are you fucking serious?
There's a submerged town. A town of black. They made their own city. It was sophisticated enough to have several different stores, houses, homes, a racetrack even that one time uncovered itself. A racetrack with bleacher seats. Okay?
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the government wanted that land to, like, build a reservoir or something there. And when they couldn't just get the black people out legally, they just said, fuck it, and flooded it. So that's why that lake is haunted.
Holy fucking... Yeah, you know what? If a place is fucking haunted...
Something happened to black people there. That's all I gotta probably say. If it's haunted, it's because there's some black people there that you did wrong.
Also, my hometown was built on, over, from what I understand, Native Indian,
burial ground or some shit?
Burial ground, yeah.
Hell yeah, it is. Hell
yeah, it is.
It was
a planned city. It was like a planned white city. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, Washington's like that. I mean, the Pacific Northwest, unfortunately, has a very racist, beginning. And the larger cities are really trying to... you know, avoid that, not avoid that, but I guess address it and be more open about, you know, supporting people for, you know, just supporting people instead of, you know, being a crazy fucking racist. And, the outskirts are going to, the bigger cities are going to choose. They're kind of like a mix.
What the fuck are you saying, Corey?
I feel like the rural areas, like places where I'm from, that they're not necessarily all like conservative hicks, but the ratio is,
Oregon was founded, was it Oregon Oregon, Washington?
I'm from Washington, but I've lived in Oregon for 8 years. And I'm from Southern Washington, which means, like, I basically was always in Portland.
Those places were founded to be racist, right? Little white hiatuses, right? So they didn't allow slavery there, but they also didn't allow black people there. So I think it's the problem with a lot of Americans is that we just don't learn enough about our history. Like, I kind of hate when people are like, you know, let history be the judge of them. And then we have people walking around and just found out about, you know, Tulsa from
the Watchmen or whatever.
Yeah, a comic book TV show. So
I couldn't get into that.
Segue to my thing.
Yeah.
My project, Slavers of New York, is really took off. It's sticker. Yeah, it's my sticker campaign, labeling, identifying, and exposing the history of slavery in down to the names of the streets.
When you say sticker campaign, what do you like? It's a bumper sticker that you put, like.
Yeah, we put a sticker on streets that we have identified to be named for slave owners, and
the street sign, or just like anywhere, like on a poster, or like how do you do it?
Like a sticker bomb down the street.
Cool.
So yeah, the stickers look like the street sign, and so it'll say something like John Van Nostrand was a slave owner. And we'll put that down the streets along with the fact, right? So it's John Van Nostrand was a slave owner, according to census records. John Van Nostrand owned 6 people.
Yeah,
right. It's also, I think, really important to stop saying slaves. Like, these people weren't slaves; they were enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So I just to drive home the point. Typically nowadays, I start to say enslaved people. Right, the enslaved, he owned people, you know,
yeah,
just to drive home that point. But this campaign has gone way bigger than we thought it would be. So we've been in the New York Times so far. We've been in the New York Times. We've been on Inside Edition, and just last night the mayoral debates happened. And you know, for those of you who aren't in the know, New York City is having a mayoral race right now. And there's about, what, like 6 candidates? 5, 6
Who's
candidates?
Who's the mayor right now? Is it de Blasio?
De blah blah.
De blah blah blue? Because he was when I left there, too.
Yeah, de blah blah.
De blah blah low.
You know what? That guy.
Everybody was like, hey, look, he seems cool. All right.
He seemed cool because he had a black family. Let's just be real about that.
I mean, I didn't want to be the one that said it.
Well, I will, because I'm black.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so now the next big thing is, yeah, the mayoral candidates were asked. They were asked about what they would do about some of the street names and landmarks and places named for slave owners. And while I most definitely do not support all of the candidates said that they support changing the name. Changing names. So that while that's not the the point of our campaign, our campaign is just to put just to put information in front of people, because facts, you know, speak for themselves, or facts, and facts are neutral. So and what people decide to do with those facts is what people decide to do with it. We're actually not advocating name change, but I do think that this is a step in the right direction. I'm, you know, I just had a small machination in my mind. I might, you know, fuck around and change the landscape in New York just because I was annoyed.
Yeah. And you know what? I just want to say, for anybody that's like thinking, okay, like, I mean, how many could there possibly be? Like, because New York, it's so progressive. Why would they have, like, first of all, like, it was both sides, both like the North and the South that owned fucking slaves. So to be like, oh, yeah, it was just the South. Like, no, but the South wanted that to be maintained, you know?
Yeah.
The North didn't own fucking slaves.
And also, just because you lived in the North and maybe you weren't doing field work doesn't mean that your life was any less arduous. Work was any less arduous. We've found bones of the enslaved with deformities on their heads and on their backs from carrying heavy loads on their heads. So, and also the work is also very isolating. Like, at least in the field, you have other people with you and around you. You can sing songs. There are ways to bond with other people, right? At the end of the day, you guys go back to slave quarters together. It's very isolating to be enslaved in the city. You belong to one family, and you might live in that basement all day, or you might not come outside, or, you know, you don't get a chance to see other people as much.
Right. You might not be working in the fields of New York City, but you were a house person.
Yeah. So anyway, check out my project at Slavers of New York. Slavers of NY.
Yes.
So, I mean, that of course means New York, but Slavers of NY,
yeah,
across all
for
social media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now that that's heavy, that was heavy, and we'll move on from that. What are you smoking, Corey?
All right. I am smoking the Sour Jack, which is a mix between Sour Diesel and Jack Herrera. I'm flying that sativa train. It's like a 70-30, I believe.
I was about to say, I think that's a hybrid.
Yeah, it's a 70-30, and this is gives you that, according to the internet, says it provides a sparkling energy and a minimizing fatigue. this is found to be great in fighting depression, bang, bang, and could help in staying energized. Sour Jack could make the users feel euphoric and happy. And it's a perfect mix with my Adderall. I feel fantastic, and I'm getting so much done.
Yeah, how's that going? Are you smoothed out?
Yeah, no, I feel a lot better. Here's the thing about Adderall and any ADHD medication is it will not cure me. I'm not cured. I'm going to have this for the rest of my life.
Of course not.
I've had it my whole life because I know as far as I can remember, I've always been me. I've always thought the way that I thought and assumed the things that I've assumed. And, you know, I really, my eyes have been opened to a lot of things lately, and I've been doing a lot of research on, you know, why I am the way I am, and even deeper delving into I need to be diagnosed for these things, but I suspect because they are ADHD symptoms, it's a number dyslexia, and which,
you got a hard time reading numbers?
Yes. I fit all the categories for number dyslexia, and I had a really, really great teacher. I had to do like special ed math or whatever when I was in, I think it was like fourth grade. And Mrs.
Are you slow?
No, I'm not fucking slow. I could always read. I could comprehend. I've always been a fucking smart ass. Like, I've always been really quick thinking and sarcastic and, like, biting and, like, you know, didn't really know how to control that either. And I always found I was rubbing people the wrong way. Well, you know, a lot of that is, you know, ADHD. And number dyslexia is definitely – I didn't know my left from my right, and I was a tour guide. And
oh shit.
So I always had to do the L with my hands, and I'd have to do it in ways that people couldn't see me, you know? And, you know, as a tour guide, I
feel like you could hide
on top of a bus.
Little...
I absolutely could. And then you'd start to memorize it, you know, you're like, to your left is, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge, you know? And I could wait and say it, you know, I could think about it first before
and
I blurted it out.
And the Sour Herrera help is helping with that too?
No, it's just fucking awesome.
Well,
but no, my Adderall is evening itself out, but I do.
Yeah.
It's not a cure. It's just,
of course not.
All it does is help me to
manage.
Manage. And I don't feel so tired all the time. And I had no idea. You're right. It's an amphetamine, but I shouldn't feel tired. But like, you don't understand. Like, not you, but anyone. You don't understand how tired I've been in the past 6 years, and what a relief it is to know that I was lacking certain brain chemistry things, and it can be fixed, and I want all my fucking time back, but at the same time, I feel like I have more time. So I
get that. I get what you're saying. Yeah, I get that.
So
I think you've been – you're not as tired anymore because it takes a lot of – mental and physical energy to try to overcome, you know, your brain kind of working against you.
Yep.
And you didn't know it was working against you in that way.
My brain and my body were attacking me and trying to kill me.
Yeah.
And I was attacking me and trying to kill me too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you live? I mean,
Well, I'm
about
smoking.
You? What are you smoking?
I'm smoking Black Diamond Kush.
Mm.
Yeah, it's great. It's a hybrid with mostly indica genetics. You know me, I love my indicas. It's been flavor engineered. So this is really tasty.
So it's right? Got flavor crystals.
It's got flavor crystals. It's blasted with flavor. Cheddar blasted. it tastes like a berry. It tastes berry like.
Oh,
like,
that's nice.
Yeah, that's nice. And it I think personally, you know, it's a strong body high that still allows for like a good mental lucidity, I guess I'm trying to say. Cool. So it's great for trying to concentrate, and it's great for, you know, getting high with friends and still having a conversation.
Yeah.
And it's in the higher spectrum of THC level, so this is definitely not something you want to like smoke and then go right out and go do something.
Well, here's the thing. You said it's called Black Diamond.
Black Diamond.
Okay, so the reason why it's not for beginners is if you know skiing, right?
Yeah, yeah. Black Diamond Mountains, those are the hard ones.
Those are the hardest ones. You don't do the Black Diamond Trail. You don't do... I only went skiing like twice in my life when I was like a child, but I knew what Black Diamond meant.
Like, yeah. I mean, for even experienced smokers, experienced cannabis users, you're going to have a lot of giggling. Like, this is really going to... touch the back of your head.
Touch you. It's gonna touch you.
It's gonna touch the back of your head.
Touch
so,
the
yeah.
shit out of you.
You I know like me. I like it nice and strong. So anyway, so what I wanted to talk about today, and it's good. Yeah, go ahead and take a pull off your smoke, because this might be a toughie for some folks. I'm even envisioning this might have to wind up being two parts. Just throwing that out there just in case. But today's topic is grief.
Grief.
It's a big one. Before we get into it though, Corey,
yeah.
can you tell them about where they can find extra content?
Oh, yeah. Did you know we have a Patreon? I mean, you
I didn't know we have a Patreon.
Yeah,
I think
you
I know
do. All right, right now there's a bunch of pep talks on our Patreon. It's patreon.com/cinderblock. Actually, I want to thank anybody. We have a couple people on our Patreon. I'm not going to lie. It's we do need help. We did just buy a new mixer thanks to donations, and I definitely want to thank you guys who have donated. And
yeah, you guys make this podcast happen. Definitely, we've pretty much crowdsourced everything.
Yeah.
So thank y'all.
And
but definitely go log
onto
that Patreon.
Yeah, thank you for my embezzlement shorts.
They're cute shorts.
I still don't remember ordering. Anyway, I love you guys. Patreon.com/cinderblock, where you can get pep talks from me and more content to come.
All right, now let's dive into grief.
Now we can. Oh boy.
Now here's my thing with grief. Right now, we all know grief. It's intense emotional and physical reaction to having lost something.
Yeah.
Right? Typically, it's losing a loved one, but grief can come about for losing anything. It's a deep sadness.
Yeah.
A
way of life. You could be grieving for a way of life.
Right. You could be grieving a breakup, right? You could be grieving, a celebrity that passed or got canceled or something. You could be grieving the passing of your pet, your animal. You could be grieving a thing you used to do, like a lifestyle. Maybe you got hurt and you can't do this thing anymore. You can grieve.
Yeah.
About pretty much anything. You have a deep sadness and an intense yearning to have that thing back. All right. Now we all typically heard about, like, grief has stages,
mm-hmm.
right? grief has what, 5 stages?
Yeah, it depends on who you ask, but we're going to do the 5 stages. Is that like the Kubler method has 5 stages.
Is that the guy's name?
I thought it was a woman.
I don't trust nobody. Woman name? I don't trust nobody named Kubler.
I'm sorry, what? Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, penned it in 1969.
I don't trust nobody named Kubler.
5 stages of grief.
That sound made up.
It's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And there's other people who have expanded on that and, you know, said more things. But we're just going to do 5 because we're going to cover everything.
We're going to talk about all of this, but I just want to say up front that there are 5 stages, right? There are many stages in between the 5 stages, and this shit's not linear, you guys. Grieving does not move nice and neatly from each stage to the next stage. You might get stuck in a stage. Mm-hmm. You might go back. You might go back to a stage. You might skip a stage. You might never even feel a certain stage, okay?
Also, have you ever seen the show The Good Place?
No, but I keep hearing I'm supposed to watch it. Okay, it's about heaven or some shit?
It's like the afterlife. So basically, okay. I'm not going to explain the show. I want to explain how they explain time. And I feel like this is how grief is explained. It's the word Jeremy Baramy written in cursive, basically. And so basically, that's the timeline of the everyone. It's like super loopy. It doesn't like it's okay. All over the place. And then there's the dot at the top of Baramy, of the eye.
Okay.
And that's only relevant during July or something like that. It's random. It's based on something that Ray Sani, a comedian in New York, who's awesome, said. And, she was a writer on, The Good Place, but, Jeremy Baramy, that is also grief. It's the word just written out. It's basically scribbles.
Right.
There is no linear. Anyway, The Good Place.
Okay. So how do we know when we're grieving? Like, what does it look like?
Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot. There's
give me a couple. Give me a couple that really jump out at you.
You could be
bitchy.
You could be you know, just kind of just detached and I don't want to be here. Everything fucking sucks, you know, or you just constantly talk about it. You loop on it. And, you know, looping is a really good sign that you're grieving because you just can't get over it. And that's why your body is doing that because you don't know what else to say. So you talk about it a lot. You cry. Your fucking head hurts. You can't fucking sleep. You know what I mean? You start to question God if you believe in God already. I mean, anything. You start to question, why shower? Fucking be? Why not eat this ice cream? Why not? Fuck yeah. You know, and then you start to feel guilty.
Or you don't eat.
And then you start to feel tired. You don't eat. And you're just I feel great. Oh, yeah, yeah. I feel fucking fine. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure, sure, sure. And then you start crying.
Mm-hmm.
It can, your emotions can be so difficult to even predict. So.
Yeah, I mean, because when you're grieving, your brain is flooded with chemicals, hormones. And as soon as your hormones go out, your hormones mess up your sleep. They mess up your appetite. If you're a menstruating person, it messes with your menstruation. You get all these things can start to happen when you know, and it starts with just not being able to eat or eating too much.
It sounds similar to shock, actually. You know, it's just everything, your body just kind of just, your body stops, you know, doing what it was doing. It does something else.
It sounds very
similar.
Oh
shit, we gotta fucking react.
Yeah, this sounds very similar to shock, but it feels like it happens over a longer period of time, you know, because there is no time limit to grieving. Some people can grieve and get to acceptance and move on quickly. Some people it takes forever, and some people never get there. And also, you can get to acceptance and still fall back to depression, you know? You can be at acceptance and still be angry. right? You can also hold these things together.
You can have a rough
but
Christmas.
What it is it's yeah, but what it is the shock. This is like the shock makes it hard to do little things, minor decision making, and then that starts to turn your brain to chaos, and you start to not be able to prepare for things. And this morning, you know, a mourning period can be really deadly. Even you hear about people who are old and their spouse dies, and then they die within hours, days, weeks of their spouse going, even though they were perfectly
I mean, everyone's like, oh, healthy. That's so sweet. They died because I'm like, fucking, no, that's not sweet. That's fucked up. That's sad, dude. We got to help them.
Yeah, do you imagine, can you imagine the intense pain they were in for those days or weeks before they went, you know? And so shock, the shock of grief can definitely affect your body.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's the thing. Of course, people need to go through a grieving period or a grieving term, and you can't put a time limit on it or whatever. But how do I know when I should worry? Do I know when I should worry about somebody or I should worry about myself?
Well, first of all, you should never make decisions while you're grieving, at least, especially in the beginning. Like, in the beginning of your loss, like, you should hold up. For example, when my grandpa passed, he set it up where his coffin was already paid for, his plot was paid for, everything was already taken care of. And my mom, who's like an only child, did not have to fuck with it at all. She just had to sign a couple things and, you know, I don't want to say easy peasy, but like he made that part as painless as possible.
Took some of the work out of it, took some of the hard part out of it for her.
Yeah.
So someone's experiencing grief. Of course, it looks different for everyone, and people go back and forth through the stages. It could be a short grief period. It could be months, years, whatever. But when should I worry about somebody who's grieving, right? Like, when should I be like, okay, this is maybe too intense?
Oh, when it's too intense. I mean, because, I mean, grieving is pretty normal, and it's important to say goodbye to things that were there. And I feel like you should worry maybe if, you know, if you or that person start kind of getting, like, maybe some nightmares, or they start to, maybe they didn't drink, but they start kind of, they start drinking again or start smoking again, or just something that they said that they weren't going to do ever again. You know,
or maybe like an increase in that sort of
behavior. Just more self-destructive stuff, just kind of like, oh well, okay, you know, just holy shit, like they're just blacking out, and like
this is outside of their character.
Yeah. And and the thing about it is if you have any like issues already that are like either underlining or that you know about, like grief can fuck with it. Of course it can. Grief fucks with all of us, but you know, it does affect you a little bit more if you have.
Yeah, so we should just
jangle,
so
jingle when, a little bit different.
Exactly. So we should worry when emergence of new patterns.
Yeah.
Emergence of drug abuse or like intensified drug abuse.
And you should know as a friend, like when your friend,
you should know when your friend's not acting right.
It starts kind of posting weird shit, like, you know, music lyrics and stuff. Like,
know your people and know what they're like, and know when they're acting outside of their typical self. And when that shit starts to get prolonged, then I think that might be when you should talk to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, you know, it's not always easy to approach somebody that is going through a lot of shit, but you can also just, you know, be present, you know, you could do something nice, especially if it's like a death or something, like, or like, you know, when I got a hip replacement, I had to like sit in my bed for 6 weeks, and my friend Mary came and brought me a lasagna. You know, just like it was just
bring
homemade
me food.
Lasagna. Yeah, exactly. Bring some ice
bring
cream.
Bring me motherfucking food.
Some people want flowers, but you know, food's good. Ice cream's good.
Yeah, come visit me and bring me things.
If you don't have much money, a card, dude. Like, go old school. People still love that shit. You know, just let them know. Just come sit with and them. Then something else is like errand sitting. Hang out with them while they do their errands.
Yeah, that's definitely great.
And even if it's like boring, go do their dishes for them. Like, oh, after my divorce, my friends came and cleaned my house for me.
That's nice.
Grieving
the loss of that relationship and your friends were there for you.
Yeah, they cleaned the house and then they reorganized the furniture so things felt different because I was still in the same place.
Right.
And it meant a lot to me and it was easier for me to grieve. And so I mean, there's going to be days that you're going to feel better, but you're going to be still haunted by it. You know, on holidays or like maybe their birthday or like the day they died or the day that ended or whatever it may be. And it's totally normal.
Yeah. So, okay, real quick, let's discuss what the stages are because we kind of said that we know that there's stages, but what are those stages? And again, how many stages are there? Some people say there's five. Some people say there's more than that. There's less or whatever. But I think we've all agreed that there are five. And they could I think we could say they all could progress.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
They could be detailed. Again,
but it doesn't have to be. So the first one is typically, for most people, denial.
It ain't just a river in Egypt.
Ba-dum-bunks. That's good. I like that. Thank you. So denial.
I'm officially a father just now. I just impregnated.
Yeah, that was the daddest of dad jokes.
I became a dad.
That was the daddest of dad jokes. That dad joke has a grandfather. Hey, what's going on, Milford?
Yeah, I was like, fuck, does that pick up?
No, I hear Milford.
He's in the other room and he hates being left out. He's the podcast executive person. He's trying to get in the door right now.
Yeah, he does. He hates where this one's going. He's like, wait. Okay, anyway.
He is denying it.
Yeah, so denial. Denial typically happens first, right? You can't believe what's happening. You don't want to believe what's happening because it threatens your sense of control, makes you feel vulnerable. The first thing we usually try to, like no, you're kidding.
This isn't happening.
This isn't happening. No, you're lying, right? And when you're in denial, you won't acknowledge the difficult situation. You try not to face the facts of the problem, or you might downplay maybe you will acknowledge what's happening, but downplay the consequences or, you know, the outcomes or whatever. And this makes sense. You're trying to shield your brain from the emotions. You're trying to shield your brain from the stress and the painful thoughts. So denying something gives you just a moment to sort of step back, give yourself space, and then you sort of absorb, right? But this is typically the first place people go.
Yeah, completely normal to deny what's happening and not believe it and question it. This is normal.
Yeah. And so, now the next step, right, is now that you've gone from denial, then you might move into anger, okay? So denial is your first coping mechanism, and then you come back with that where you can't show people that you're sad about this. In fact, you're angry.
Yeah, right? Fuck her. That's her fault. Whatever, bitch.
Yeah, and anger is a shield to sadness, right? That's what my therapist has told me. Anger is a shield to sadness. But it's easier to show people that I'm angry about something than I'm sad about something, right? Maybe if I show enough anger, you might even give me some space.
Like, are you sad? No, I'm just fucking pissed. Like, okay.
Yeah, and like, so
working through it.
So then, you know, you might direct this anger at other people, you know, like, why the hell did, you know, you might direct this person, the anger at the person who's passed or something.
Yep.
Why did they do this? Why did they go there? Why were they being risky?
And that's normal, especially because they can't defend themselves and you're going to assume that they said the worst thing ever, especially when you're grieving. You're going to try to, you're sad. You're going to try to hurt yourself probably more.
Yeah. Or you might think, why me?
Mm-hmm.
Why, this is not fair. Somebody is doing this to attack me. And rather than be soft and vulnerable, you go into anger and defense mode, right? If you're a person of faith, right? You might start to question your beliefs. You know, I'm a good Christian. I'm a faithful Muslim. Why is this happening? Where is God? Why didn't God protect me? Why didn't God protect this person? Why didn't God protect this thing?
Right. And if you're a drinker of Mountain Dew, this is when you punch the wall.
There's an automatic wall punch that happens when you get a certain amount of Mountain Dew in your system.
Yeah.
Okay. But you need to sort of feel this anger and try to
full Kyle. You go full Kyle.
Don't go full Kyle, okay? Yeah, never. You need to find a way to express your anger without going full Kyle.
Yes.
All right. But yeah, when you experience a grief event, you're going to feel maybe a little disconnected from reality, like you don't have any grounding, and that in itself can be angering. You've lost control of a situation. You feel alone. You feel deserted. You feel powerless. And those things can make people angry, right? So that's the anger stage.
Cool.
Then.
I mean, not cool, but like, it's normal. You're fine. You're fucking fine. This is fucking normal.
These are normal things. It might feel out of control and so big to you, but this is why there's essentially like a formula for it, because this is how we all cope in a certain way, right? So number three, you're going to go to the next stage, possibly. You possibly might go into bargaining, right? Because you feel vulnerable and because you feel helpless and you're feeling these intense emotions, you might want to start to look for a way to regain control and to affect the outcome of what's going on. And you might start create what if scenarios. Well, if I just do this, or if only this happened, or if you're somebody of belief, you might make a deal or a promise to God, your higher power, your HP or whatever, that if they can do this or do that.
One thing I'm going to, like, one time, actually multiple times when I was throwing up from alcohol, and I'd just be like hugging the toilet and it'd be fucking disgusting. And I'd tell God, hey man, like, I promise I will never drink again. If you just make this fucking stop right now, please. And, I lied every time. In fact, I'm have a White Claw tonight.
People tell me
bargaining. Like, I was willing to never drink again, but then, you know, whatever.
But a White Claw. People tell me so much about White Claw. White Claw came out or got really popular right as I was like getting deeper into my alcoholism. I didn't see the appeal.
No, here's the thing. It's like it's alcoholic LaCroix that.
I'm not even a big fan of LaCroix. So
there you go. You're not missing out. This is the thing about it that I like about it is the low calories and you know, the low carbs and like, you know, it's just basically I'm trying to still lose my thyroid weight, but I'm an alcoholic, so it's very difficult. So I still want to fucking.
How strong are they even? They're just like the same as like a regular 4%. Beer, aren't they? That's less than a regular beer. Get the fuck out of here.
Remember kombucha?
How many of those do you got to drink to even get drunk?
Exactly.
I'm not trying to drink that much water.
Well, it keeps me from getting... Well, here's the thing. I'm on antidepressants and Adderall, and I don't need to get totally alcohol.
You need to get drunk anymore.
Because it doesn't affect me in great ways.
Okay.
To get drunk on Adderall.
Okay. Yeah. No, it doesn't.
It can be a little fun with a couple beers, but.
No, it's not. It's not the best thing to do.
Yeah. So anyway. This is just kind of my way of, limiting myself. Anywho.
So Corey bargaining over the toilet.
Anyway, that's my bargaining.
Yeah. Praying to God.
I'll never drink again, God.
On the porcelain throne. Praying and bargaining with God.
Like, for real, Jesus. I will never drink again if you just... I don't want to throw up tonight. Please don't throw up tonight.
I've been there. But anyway. Yeah. So yeah, bargaining is kind of like that... Sort of like a last line of defense before, like, you know, defense against the emotions of grief. It sort of helps you put off some of the sadness, confusion, and some of the hurt, because you, for a second, you feel like you might be able to regain control of the situation if you just do this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you just do this, I'll do this. And like, who are you saying that to? You know what I mean? Like,
right. But that's the sort of the last line of defense before you start to really, before you really start to feel your emotions. It's the last line, because the next one is depression. Okay. And you might have, you know, think like denial, anger, and bargaining are maybe the more active parts, right? You're doing a lot of mental stuff. You know, you're going through a lot of mental hoops to try to make that work, whereas the depression kind of feels like the quiet. It's sinking in, and, you know, you're kind of letting the sadness of the situation sort of wash over you, and you're going to feel those feels. And it's up to you to decide how you feel those feels, right? Because the last, number five is the fifth and final stage. You know, again, it's not final, but the fifth and final stage is acceptance. You've been able to accept what happened. You've been able to look at what happened.
I accept this.
And not only are you accepting what's happening, but you're now starting to look to the future for how to move out of this.
You start planning. So, yeah.
Yes. You start planning. You start deciding, you know, how, you know, you see how the loss has changed your life. You maybe stop wishing to go back to things. Mm-hmm. And you're just learning how to, you know, you're focused on how to move forward. Now, like I said, it's the fifth stage. It's not the final stage, because people can accept things. And then one day you go back and you still feel really angry. Or you're accepting it, and then one day you fall back into a depression. So you're always going to be practicing acceptance, right? And maybe you never...
Unfortunately, self-care is constant.
Self-care is constant. You'll never be done with it.
It's exhausting, but it's constant.
So when something traumatic happens, and there's a loss... It's okay to go and feel through these stages. Also, don't feel bad if you never felt angry, or don't feel bad if you never had a deep depression or whatever. Not all these stages are
mandatory.
Applicable. Yeah, it's not mandatory. It's don't gotta work in this order. You can go back. You can go forward. Like we said, when should you worry?
And
you
like,
should,
honestly,
you should worry when it gets in the
be
way.
Be grateful if you don't get depression.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it'll pop up. If you don't get it right away, or you don't get it in time, this is one of those things, you know, grieving is a really funny thing. It don't work
all
the time in the same way, you know? So you might get all the way to acceptance, never felt depression, or never felt anger, and then 5 years later, just so angry about this situation. 5 years later. Yep. Just so depressed about it, you know? So again, you're always going to have to be going through acceptance, and you can't beat yourself up. You just have to get to that stage. However long it takes you. Don't let anybody speed you through any stage. Don't let anybody make you feel bad if you go backwards or whatever. The only time we should start worrying, again, is if you start developing some sort of self-destructive behavior. Because, you know, that's what happened to me. I was having grief about the state of the relationship with my mother. And right before I went into rehab, there was just like 6 months of all, you know, 6 months of all four of these things before I went to rehab and found some acceptance. You know, at first I tried to like just act like there was no problem, you know, denial. I started to try to, you know, bargain, and if, you know, maybe if I do this, she'll be better. Maybe if I do that, she'll be better, you know. And then she would go completely, you know, the answer is left, and she's like, you know, right, all the way right. And it's like, no, my left. And then there's anger, you know, and then there's depression and behind that. And so I went through 6 months of all this stuff, and it got maladaptive. You know, I was self-destructive behavior, lots and lots of drinking.
Yeah.
Suicidal thoughts were definitely there. Like, you know what? If I can't get along with my mother, if my mom doesn't like me, You know? So these were the, these are the things.
What do you have?
Yeah, what do I have?
No, I get it.
You know, I was, definitely deep in suicidal thoughts, nightmares all the time. If, you know, I would drink so that I wouldn't have nightmares, you know, because if I didn't drink enough, I'd have a nightmare. So I realized I was.
I met a guy in the psych ward like that too. Yeah.
Yeah. He drank to not have nightmares, not have dreams.
Yeah. I met a man in the psych ward. It was super, he wound up being one of my friends there. And he had seen a lot. He was like a mercenary or whatever, like killed people. So he said, you know, I just drink and I drink and I drink. And he drank Georgie. Everyone drank Georgie in the psych ward, by the way. And he was like, I just drink and then I pass out. And then, I hope I don't have nightmares.
Yeah. I relate.
I'm just like, holy fuck, man.
Yeah, I relate.
And we stayed up all night and just hung out because he didn't want to go to sleep. I didn't have a bed, but yeah.
My first few nights at rehab, I had night terrors.
Of course.
Because suddenly I couldn't drink to go to sleep. And my first few nights, I was having night terrors. But anyway.
No, but this is important. This is like, you know, that is your body going through grief of the, you know, detox.
Yeah.
It's very relevant, I think. And
yeah, but here's the thing. If you're having trouble, you think, you know, if you're exhibiting some of those, like, warning signs.
Yeah.
Or whatever about it getting bad.
You're going to hate this. It's therapy.
It's therapy,
more therapy,
man. It's therapy. It's
group
therapy.
Therapy is good for this kind of stuff, especially because a lot of people deal with grief and it's not never too like deep of a of,
yeah.
Unless the
people can,
you know,
relate.
The grief can
people
be very
can really
superficial.
Relate.
They really can. Yeah.
People can really relate, whether it's big or small grief. People can really relate.
Yeah.
And again, there's no right or wrong way to go through your grief. Just if you feel like you need help, please go get it. If you're a friend,
exactly.
If you're a friend to someone who's experiencing grief, get them a present. Get them a small gesture. Spend some time with them. Like we said, do a chore.
Send them an email, for the love of God.
Just even send an email. Just be flexible. Understand that maybe your friend's not going to, you know, take your kindness right away. They might be despondent. They might be in maybe one of those anger phases or depression phases. But still be there for your friend, okay?
Yep.
And honestly, you guys, I just want to let you know you're all going to experience some form of grief at some time.
Yes.
This is just like when we're talking about imposter syndrome. Most people are going to feel this. So
yeah, exactly.
Not alone.
And if you're grieving, don't worry if you gain weight. That is something that's actually in this list as something that you should never feel bad about if you're grieving or you're seeing someone.
If you gain or lose
weight. Don't fucking tell them, oh, you've gained some. Go fuck your own ass if you do that.
You're going to gain weight. You're going to lose weight. Your body is going to react.
Let people's body be. Just, you know, and I'm just saying like that for if you notice that, you know, hey, you can only wear sweats right now because you're sad. That's okay. And it's normal.
Okay. Do what you got to do. Corey.
So,
where can folks find the pod?
Rip, rap for the podcast at You're Fine Pod. It is I don't know what that's.
I don't know what that was.
It's amazing. It's on Twitter. It's on Instagram. Come get us, Mother Truckers.
At You're Fine Pod. That's
Fine
the
pod.
R. That's the R E.
Yeah,
that's the R E.
You are fine. You're fine.
Hi. And what's your social media?
Social media is at Corey Spencer, 1 R, 2 E's. Thank you. Awesome. Yeah.
What else you got?
I got a book.
You
I'm
got
not
a book?
Okay. I'm not okay. You're not okay. It is. It was released last year in the middle of the goddamn pandemic. If you go on indiebound.org and you just type in your zip code, that way you can support your local bookstore and buy it from there.
It's a mental health coloring book.
You can buy it anywhere, actually, but I always say, you know, some of these local bookstores took a hit. And if you get out there.
If you can.
Yeah.
And then for me, check me out on my social medias, Elsa Just Elsa, Elsa Just Elsa, all three words. And then also check out Slavers of New York. That's at Slavers of NY. And then again, we also have a Patreon. That's patreon.com/cinderblock.
Cinderblock. fuck, hey, I love you, and I want to be there as a friend.
Yeah, I want to be there for you if you're ever grieving. I'm going to be there, and I'm going to put my hand on your shoulder and be like, hey, you're fine.
You're fine.
You're fine. Everybody, you're fine.
You're fine. We love you.
Thanks for listening. You're fine. You're Fine is a production of Cinderblock Comedy in association with Soda Bag Studios and Your Town Is Next Media. Our show is engineered and produced by Alex Fleming and Alexander Scott. Thanks to Morgan Pielli for our show artwork and to Intellectual Dark Wave for our theme song. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Your Fine Pod.